Every once in a while, I feel pulled to kind of explore the yamas and niyamas on a deeper level. And every time I return to these, I sink deeper into embodied understanding in myself and as well as deeper discernment. And so, in this first of a series that I am planning on sharing, I wanted to explore ahimsa, which is generally translated as nonviolence, non-harm, or kindness. And I wanted to explore, is it truly possible to live without violence and harm? So generally speaking, it's agreed that this is a good and right principle to live by. And I'm not going to dive into why it's good. The virtue speaks for itself in this regard. What I want to explore are the nuances, the distinctions, and even exceptions to ahimsa, at least in the way that it can be misunderstood in many ways that I've experienced and I've witnessed. Why? Because I find that at least the way that I've lived my life as a modern Westerner, and for so many people in our culture that's highly psychologized and pathologized and largely removed from nature, we struggle reconciling living by these ideals in the reality of our world. And with pulling apart what we've conflated, we may have space to sink into a deeper understanding of how to live by these ideals, however imperfectly that we may. So let's look at these words: ideal, virtue, value, ethics. These are inarguably human realm concepts. Nowhere in nature do these notions exist. And we live in a reality where there is actually violence all around and within us. Nature is often and reliably violent. And even though our modern culture is quite removed from nature, we are still made of her. In an obvious illustration, we cannot fault a cheetah for capturing an impala, ripping it to shreds to feed herself and her cubs. We outsource this violence to large fluorescent lit warehouses of animals that never see sunlight, for hired men to commit this violence on a grand scale, so most of us never have to experience what it's like to have blood on our hands in order to eat. You can Google these photos. They're far more disturbing than the images of cheetahs eating impalas, in my opinion. I watched a YouTube video a few weeks ago where a Westerner asked a tribal African man what was the meaning of life. His profound answer: meat. People who live within the cycles of nature in this way have little notion to think deeply about the meaning of life. Think about it. In order to have meaning, there must be some mind to have created meaning. And there must be time and space enough for these notions to arise within. When humans still largely hunted for their sustenance, they were within an intimate cycle of life and death, and guaranteed they gave respect for the kill that they took down for survival. Offerings, reverence, prayer. This offering back is one thing I find largely missing from the discussion around nonviolence and survival. Sure, you can eat meat, you cannot eat meat. You can still eat plants, but they do experience something when they've been harvested too. It's being killed. You could starve yourself, but then that's a slow violence to your own self. Beyond food, we're all engaged in global acts of violence by the cars, the computers, the smartphones that we use with all the precious metals that are mined by slave labor in parts of the world that we've never been to. And what New Age spiritualist now doesn't have healing crystals shipped from across the planet that are also mined with very questionable ethics? Your clothes. We all know who makes our clothes. We're all culpable for violence on a grand scale. And we are so comfortably removed from it that it's easy to speak in perfectionistic, idealistic tone about living nonviolently. But it is a facade. In terms of protection, violence is often necessary. The story is still seared into my mind of a Texas father who unintentionally beat a man to death who was raping his young daughter. Too many people stay in abusive relationships out of the conflated notion that if they just were a little nicer, a little softer, if they don't fight back, their abuser would suddenly see the light and change. On a micro level, our cells are bursting within us constantly. Our muscles tear when we lift weights. On a macro level, we literally started with a bang, an explosion. What is more violent than that? Okay, so I'm not sharing all of this now to become utterly nihilistic, but to illustrate this deeper aspect of our reality, there is a kind of violence all around and within us. And any ethical guideline is quite human created. Though with the recent orcas' apparent retaliation against yachts, they may need to come up with their own ethical code at some point as well. And ethical guidelines removed from the context that they came from can be conflated to mean something different than what it was perhaps originally meant to. Whenever the first idea arose of living nonviolently, perhaps thousands, tens of thousands, or even hundreds of thousands of years ago, who can really say? We now know human history is much older than previously thought. Whenever this idea first came to a human mind, there was certainly a context in which it arose that is vastly different from the world we live in now, with all of our modern conveniences at the cost of third world thriving. And certainly, they weren't pathologizing or psychologizing their human experience as we so regularly do now in the West. There's obviously the importance of adapting ethics to the modern world, but again, it's important to adapt holistically and not pick and choose what suits us and toss the rest, or turn a blind eye to what is uncomfortable. Most of my life, I've been quite a passive person. For a long time, I conflated anger with violence. Who else has done this? Raise your hand. I was quite a strict vegan for about 6 years to save the animals. I rode my bike for about 7 years to save the earth. I made a lot of my own clothes. I cut down on my consumerism to a point where once I only produced one grocery bag of garbage over 3 months. Pretty impressive for an American. Nonviolence, as I understood it, was a huge guiding principle of mine, and it still is. But I was still beating myself up terribly on the inside. My inner dialogue was a horrendous bully. I've been very unkind to my body, my spirit, my mind. I was absolutely one of those people who used yoga asana to try to be more perfect. Again, raise your hand if you're guilty of this too. Thank God Instagram wasn't a thing yet during that phase of mine. Then studying yoga a bit more in depth, even more perfectionistic tendencies can seep in. This is a quote from Four Chapters on Freedom, commentary on the Yoga Sutras of Sage Patanjali. Mahatma Gandhi was finally shot down. Christ was crucified. Muhammad was stoned by his opponents. The great Sufi saint Mansur was tortured by his enemies and his skin was peeled off. All these men had enemies, but in India, there have been many who had no enemies because they practiced ahimsa perfectly. The most important thing is not to oppose even violent people. End quote. Yes, I cherry-picked this excerpt from a fuller context of the book to highlight my point, and these sutras are picked from a much deeper context of culture, tradition, and history that we in the West simply are not immersed in. So bringing thoughts like this into a hyper-individualistic, socially disconnected, overly psychologized Western culture generally stripped of connection to nature and spirit. And it can very easily sound like victim blaming. It can sound like saintly martyrdom. Or that even the most saintly person on earth will succumb to horrific violence. Even they are not perfect enough, so why would we even bother? That last line, the most important thing is to not oppose even violent people, literally makes my hair stand on end as I recall my own experiences and countless stories of friends, clients, students, and others who have put up with terrible treatment out of some notion that if we just be sweeter and smile, that the violence would stop. And I'm certain I've not been the only one to read lines like this and interpret through my Western lens, through my own life experience lens, and then double down on my sweetness and passivity. Context matters. The biggest contexts, as far as we know, we literally started with a bang. Nature is violent. Survival is violent. Nonviolence is an ideal that is human created. And we are all one. We live in a non-dual reality. We are ultimately love at our very core. I and countless others throughout history have known this to be true in our bones. Nuance matters. Anger does not always equal violence. Violence does not always equal hate. Idealized kindness means nothing when someone should be fighting for their life. Intention matters. From my vantage point, a point where I've chewed and stewed, wrangled and wrestled for quite some time, we must distinguish where our intentions are and where we are pointing. It all starts within our own internal beingness. In the bombardment of our modern world, this is too easy to overlook, to forget. Put simply, not if, but when we are complicit in violence. Is it out of maliciousness? Is it out of avoidance? Ignorance? Naivety? Is it out of protection or survival? This matters a whole lot. Can you feel there is a texture of directionality in all those? Malicious violence is the clearest of wrong violences. It's pointed the wrong way. It's pointed not out of love or protection or survival. With avoidance or turning a blind eye, we are aware enough that something is wrong, but perhaps we don't want to see reality as it is, and we feel more comfortable in our fantasy world, or we are overwhelmed and so we put our heads back in the sand. Tackling the violence of slave labor, factory farming, the pillaging of the earth's resources, this is all incredibly overwhelming. With naivety, we simply don't know what we don't know. This one's fairly neutral. And then what about violence out of protection or out of survival or even out of love? Goddess Kali, Chinamasta, the goddess archetypes that are known for their ferocity, out of a deep and reverent love, a love that is certainly beyond the human mind. How do we reconcile this? We slow down. We take time to get right with our intentions. We take time to get right with our motives. We carve out dedicated space to reflect, pause, and then move forward with greater awareness. Here's a quote on Ahimsa from the Yamas and Niyamas by Deborah Adele. It is anti-cultural to claim any space that is simply space, or to move with any kind of lingering, or to take time for closure. End quote. I am an unabashedly huge proponent of people slowing the fuck down. It's something I come back to as an answer over and over and over and over. In yoga classes, people rush through shavasana all the time. What's next? Smartwatch is beeping. The mind is already thinking about what's next. In modern life, many people don't know how to relax without alcohol or drugs, without numbing out to Netflix or social media or food. We often eat violently too. Who eats their meals with true savoring reverence anymore? And our culture perpetuates this. Too many people are overworked, work in systems that don't promote taking time, where people are forced to eat on the go, etc. It is a revolutionary act to slow down and to rest. When we slow down enough, with enough cultivated awareness, there is a palpable and visceral somatic sense that we are no longer in survival mode. We are no longer animals fighting for our survival, at least on the whole. Sadly, many individuals still are fighting for their survival. We are animals. We are nature. We are also nature experiencing herself. Each one of us, beautiful, unique, individual humans, each one of us is nature experiencing herself. What happens when the earth experiences herself? Yes, cheetahs must eat the impala to survive. Kali must consume the day for the night to arrive. But how long must her people forget that they are made of the same matter as she is, and act out cruelties and turn blind eyes that cause self-destruction? A body-mind that has turned on itself. A body-mind that is beating itself up. This is the violence that must stop, viscerally, somatically, profoundly. There is no way to be perfect about ahimsa, at least as far as I have experienced. But what I have landed on, marinated in, submerged, and immersed in the context, is that context, nuance, and intention are what matters. And it truly starts within, because our individual interoceptive somatic experience is absolutely a mirror to our external shared world. Ahimsa is absolutely an important guiding ideal for humanity, else we fall into self-destruction, nihilism, hedonism, and unconscious darkness. Taking time to slow down, reflect, and bring greater awareness to context, nuance, and intention make all the difference. Remembering that we are nature, we are not our egoic mind, our identity mind, our fantasy mind. When we bring the context of nature, things shift. Anyone who has spent a decent amount of time in the forest, where there are predators like bears or cougars, will undoubtedly have a visceral, embodied sense of respect for the cycle of nature. Nature is terrifically humbling, and we are an arrogant modern people. Nature reminds us of context. These guiding virtues must be married in a cosmic dance within oneself. Particularly, what comes to mind with ahimsa for me is also hri, humility, and huta, offering. Two niyamas that I plan to explore and share more on soon. As well, this word that we say at the end of yoga classes, namaste, literally translates as reverence to you. People can expound on this translation. The light in me sees and honors the light in you. In context, and in particular, the non-dual lineage I practice within, we are all ultimately one. Every cell in my body says this is true. And so, if I must commit a violent act in order to eat, or pay for someone to do this on my behalf to nourish myself, let it be in deep reverence and humbleness to the greater cycle of life, which I will, sooner or later, dissolve back into as part of the vast void of possibility. Kali will consume me. My flesh and blood will become fertilizer for the earth. My bones will perhaps become artifacts. May I also not look away from the gross atrocities happening on a global scale that I am inextricably a part of as a modern human. May I act in ways that help lessen these violences, in ways that are available to me, in ways that I can act on habitually each day. May I offer my devotion to this greater awareness. May I slow down enough to feel the nourishment of the food that I eat, appreciate the clothes that I wear, and bask in the smiles, sparkling eyes, and the souls that I meet each day. May I slow down enough to feel the earth beneath my feet. This earth, this beautiful earth that we take so much from without offering much respect back. This earth that I am also made of, and that you are also made of. May I slow down enough to breathe and love. And soak in my aliveness while I'm here.